düşüyor ilk üstüne şeytan mı?
Who's in favor of opening some windows? Okay, let's do it. No screens for that. Okay, you can just stand there for an hour and hold it on. We have something that we can put in there. Okay, stand at least that much. Okay. And do you have a book? I saw a whole lot of books out there. A cell phone check. All the cell phones on the silent. And nice to see everyone. What about you, does it is? Yeah, you can loosen this up just a little bit. Yeah, that's good. That helps. Chapter 7, text 10. Mayajakshena prakriti.
Mayajakshena prakriti.
Suyate sacharacharam.
Suyate sacharacharam.
Hetunanena kanteya.
Hetunanena kanteya.
Jagadvi parivartate.
Jagadvi parivartate.
Mayajakshena prakriti.
Mayajakshena prakriti.
Suyate sacharacharam.
Suyate sacharacharam.
Hetunanena kanteya.
Hetunanena kanteya.
Jagadvi parivartate.
Jagadvi parivartate.
Mayajakshena prakriti.
Suyate
sacharacharam.
Hetunanena
kaunteya.
Jagadvi
parivartate.
Mayajakshena prakriti.
Suyate sacharacharam.
Hetunanena kaunteya.
Hetunanena kaunteya. Jagadvi parivartate.
Mayajakshena
prakriti.
Suyate
sacharacharam.
Hetunanena kaunteya.
Hetunanena kaunteya.
Jagadvi
parivartate. Jagadvi parivartate.
Adhyakshena,
by superintendence,
prakritihi,
material nature,
suyate,
manifests,
sa,
Shraddham,
Shraddham,
the moving and the non-moving.
Moving and non-moving.
Hetuna,
Hetuna,
for the reason.
For the reason.
Anina,
Anina,
this.
This.
Kaunteya,
Kaunteya,
O son of Kunti.
O son of Kunti.
Jagat.
Jagat,
the cosmic manifestation.
The
cosmic manifestation.
Viparivartate
is working.
Is working.
This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. Purport. It is clearly stated here that the Supreme Lord, although aloof from all the activities of the material world, remains the Supreme Director. The Supreme Lord is the Supreme Will and the background of this material manifestation. But the management is being conducted by material nature. Krishna also states in the Bhagavad Gita that of all the living entities in different forms and species, I am the father. The father gives seeds to the womb of the mother for the child. And similarly, the Supreme Lord, by his mere glance, injects all the living entities into the womb of material nature. And they come out in different forms and species. Make a note, there's a typographical error on page 395. It says, anyway, it's completely wrong.
Okay.
Make a note, write it down. And they come out in different forms and species according to their last desires and activities. All these living entities, although born under the glance of the Supreme Lord, take their different bodies according to their past deeds and desires. So the Lord is not directly attached to this material creation. He simply glances over material nature. Material nature is thus activated, and everything is created immediately. Because he glances over material nature, there is undoubtedly activity on the part of the Supreme Lord. But he has nothing to do with the manifestation of the material world directly. This example is given in the Smriti. When there is a fragrant flower before someone, fragrance is touched by the smelling power of the person, yet the smelling and the flower are detached from one another. There is a similar connection between the material world and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, he has nothing to do with the material world, but he creates by his glance and ordains. In summary, material nature without the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot do anything. Yet the Supreme Personality is detached from all material activities. Om Akhantamidam Tasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurudev Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manovristam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tathati Shapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jutha Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsta Shri Rupam Shakrachakam Sahadana Sadhutam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lavita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Parana Sindho Dinavantho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kashana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavishvili Prashadam Sute Devi Pranamami Hoi Priye
Vancha bhagavatyascha kripasindho yevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Guru Vrindavana. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Maya Jakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam He tu nāne na kaṁteya jagat ni parivartate. There are laws of nature by which everything is working. That's, in one sense, the subject matter of science, to see how the laws of gravity are working, how these laws and those laws are working. But the intelligent person also has to ask, under whose direction are they working? That there's law means that there's law enforcement. Without law enforcement, there's no meaning to laws. Just like there are traffic laws, drive on the right or stop at the red. But they're only laws because the cops enforce them. Without enforcement, there's no law. And the laws also have to be made. It's not that just out of nowhere the law comes, stop at the red, don't go beyond 60. There have to be authorities to make the law. So behind the laws of nature, there's Krishna. Behind the laws of nature, there's Krishna. Everything is working so nicely. The sun is exactly moving in its orbit 365 days a year, 365 in a fraction. Doesn't speed up one year and slow down the next year. Everything's exactly coordinated. That requires intelligence. I just finished an editorial review of a new BBT book called Rethinking Darwin. Because this is the centennial year of the respected Charles Darwin. And Charles Darwin's theory of natural selection and evolution and so on has certain attractive features. It also has certain very serious problems associated with it. And it also has it also has theological implications. And both spiritually minded people and scientists who carefully think about it know that it has theological implications. The implication of Mr. Darwin's theory is that, all right, everything, species arise from one another, one after another, fine. But then, taken further, as the neo-Darwinists take it, where the first few creatures come from? Well, the more complex ones come from the more simple ones, and the more simple ones finally come from chemicals. The chemicals self-organize and become living beings. So life comes from matter. And it's all matter itself does this. We have my sister and I have a mutual friend who's presented all of this in charming storybook fashion for children as a matter of educating them or indoctrinating them or enlightening them, depending on how you want to look at it, in these truths of modern science. by which material nature does everything. When the cosmic, when the Earth starts as a superheated globe, it decides at one point that it wants to explode. It decides at one point that it wants to do this. It decides at one point. Nature is self-intelligent and decides to do things. It decides, wouldn't it be a great idea to have living beings? And so it sprouts some living beings. This is ultimately the, of course, a simplified version of how the materialist thinks, that nature is self-intelligent and you don't need anything else beyond nature. Made by nature, we mean the sum total of matter and energy. And matter and energy on their own have everything you need to make a universe, to make what we see, make reality as we know it. And no outside help is needed. But there are scientists, perhaps in the minority, perhaps on the outside, not exactly on the outside, but not the scientists who are against whom strong efforts are made in order to keep them on the outside, that is to sideline them, who point out that there are deficiencies in this idea. First of all, in Mr. Darwin's theories, there are serious deficiencies because we don't actually see that species evolve into other species. There's no actual evidence that happens. We see, yes, one species, there are variations within species, but species actually turning into new species is an undocumented phenomenon within science. Seriously. Undocumented. We also have problems with physical systems where, according to Mr. Darwin, everything evolves in such a way that it's selected out because of the advantages it confers. Each adaptation, which is useless, gets you nowhere, and each adaptation, which is useful, brings you ahead. And so the useful adaptations survive, and the useless ones are weeded out, or the creatures that develop useless adaptations die out, and the better ones live on and perpetuate their genes until still better variations come along. That's his idea. But there are serious problems with that, like the eye, for example. The eye is seriously problematic because you need every part of it in order for it to confer advantages. A lens without a retina is useless. A retina without a lens is useless. A lens without a cornea is useless. A lens and a cornea and a retina are useless without an optic nerve. There are all these, actually when you get down to it, dozens and dozens, probably hundreds and hundreds of parts, which are all needed before the eye becomes useful for anything. Along the way, they're just like a watch hand without a watch. What use is it? Or the numbers on a watch without the watch hands, they're useless. You get all these pieces, which on their own are useless. And the only way they become useful is if they all come together in this complex system. Well, how does that happen? By natural selection. There are lots of examples of that sort of thing. Complex systems, and I won't run down the book for you, but when the book is out, you'll see all sorts of different kinds of complex systems, even in the most simple little one-celled creatures, the ones with rotors on them, and that rotor is actually not a slight thing. They have a little flagellum, and it needs a rotor, and it's kind of like all these different parts. And each part is useless without the others. So many examples like that. And there's no explanation of how, by natural selection, these complex systems could have evolved. Apart from that, Charles Darwin propounded his theory in the days when the idea was that a cell was really just kind of a very simple thing. you know, when we talk about a one-celled creature, we're talking about an exceedingly simple thing. It's just basically a cell wall and protoplasm, and, you know, it's like simple. But modern biology, having looked into the cell, finds that the cell is an exceedingly complex entity. And cellular biology has created a similar obstacle for Darwinian evolution. How does this exceedingly complex single cell evolve from anything? In Darwin's time, it could have been thought of by just, you know, a little bit of hydrogen, a little bit of nitrogen, a little bit of this, and a little bit of that, and you get a cell. It doesn't work that way anymore. The cell's too complex. The whole problem of how life at some point becomes conscious, rather matter at some point becomes conscious, is exceedingly difficult. There's no known biological, chemical, physical description of how that can happen. They just say it happens. They say it happens, but they can't document how it happens. They can't mathematically describe how it happens. They can't give a reasonable scientific account of how it happens. They can wave a magic wand and say, "Oh yeah. Remember the experiments where they showed that if you had a chemical soup and you put electricity, then you'd get biochemicals." But that's all they got was biochemicals. Biochemicals are chemicals. You know, you can throw some water and some sugar and some lemon and you get a neurocon, but you don't get a person to drink it by stirring. There are all these serious problems. The whole complexity of the universe itself, if it were if the orbit of the Earth was slightly closer, you'd have problems. If it was slightly further away, you'd have problems. So many different things of that nature. So, and all of this is supposed to just happen on its own because nature is so smart. How did nature get so smart? So the Vedic account is different. There's an intelligent person behind everything. When you see a car and it's nicely made and it functions nicely, you don't figure that it evolved from, you know, you figure that you're, what's that car that you've got there, the hybrid car? The Prium. That's your Prium. Priyatamak. So that fancy car hasn't evolved from the Model T on its own. You can trace an evolution of the car, how there was the Model T, and then there was this, and there was that, and then there was the this, and then they finally decided that all that wouldn't survive, and so we need the hybrid, and then after that we need the electric car. But it's not that one car evolves automatically into the next one. There's an intelligent direction that guides that evolution. There's an intelligence at work. So this book will explore this idea that behind material nature, there has to be intelligence. Behind material nature, there has to be intelligence. That intelligence is Krishna. Maya ajakshena. Ajaksha means oversight. There has to be an overseer. There has to be a manager. Ajaksha means management. But Krishna says everything is managed by me. My ajakshena, prakriti suyate sacharacha. All the living and moving and non-moving beings produced by material nature are coming from Krishna. Hetuna neena kartya. Hetuna means there's a cause. This is science. There must be a cause of something. Things don't just happen. Things don't just pop into existence. Even if you think that life came from chemicals when there were these cosmic rays, where did the cosmic rays come from? Where did the chemicals come from? There has to be a cause. And just to stop at a certain point and just say, well, you know, why? how do you get matter just doing things? But finally, the cause is Krishna. When you come to not the supreme lump of matter or the supremely simple elements of nature, but when you come to the most intelligent person, then you come to the cause. This house, now that we reduce it to its simplest elements, now you've explained where the house came from. It came from intelligence. Intelligent architect, intelligent owner, they get together and they say, we want it this way. Intelligence has to be there. So, hey to na. One has to ask, what is the cause? And the cause is ultimately Krishna. Hey to na ne bhante jagat viparivartate. Jagat means that which is moving. Things don't move on their own. Even if we say, well, it's all nature's energies. Behind energy, there has to be a source of energy. That source is Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada, just on the basis of Bhagavad Gita, stood against the reductionistic conclusions so often found at the very basis of modern scientific thinking. Prabhupada said, I'm not a scientist, but I can understand from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is the supreme scientist, and I can understand, this is common sense. They're saying that life comes from matter. Tell me what matter you want, I'll give it to you, and now you produce life for me. I'll give you, you want to produce a chicken, I'll give you white, I'll give you yellow, produce a chicken. Produce a mosquito, produce anything. Just tell me what chemicals you want, and I'll provide them. And you show your stuff. Science means demonstration. So give me your list, requisition what chemicals you want, and what laboratory equipment you need, and then create some living being. And then we'll talk about your scientific theory. And they'll say, yes, we're working on it, we're doing it, we're moving. And Prabhupada said, post-dated check. Post-dated check, especially in these days, is a check you don't trust. So I was just at the, I guess it was the train station or something, and while I was waiting to get to talk to the ticket person, their policy was there on checks, and first thing was, you know, check has to have been dated prior to today, not after. We don't accept your post-dated check. So Prabhupada was that way with science. Don't tell me what you're going to do, show me what you've done. So far, you haven't done it. You're just talk. You haven't created a mosquito, a bug, a one-celled living being, nothing. So Prabhupada, therefore, said actually they're rascals because they're claiming to be scientists, but it's cheating. They're claiming that everything can go on by material processes only, but they can't demonstrate it. And at the base of their approach is a clandestine agenda that let's get rid of the need for any separate intelligence here. Because while the cat's away, the mice will play. If there's no God, we can do what we like. We're all on our own, and we make all the rules ourselves. We decide what's valuable, we decide what's good, we decide what's bad, we decide everything. And we just do everything in our own way. When the cat's away, the mice will play. But as soon as there's a supreme intelligence, then we must have some relationship with that supreme intelligence. As soon as there's a supreme intelligence, there must be some relationship. As soon as there's a supreme whole, well, then I'm a part, and the part must have some relationship to the whole. Well, that's the actual fact. And Krishna consciousness means to discover that relationship and to act in that relationship and to become happy in that relationship. where we have a separate project, we'll be happy without any such thing. What do we need God for? He's just a pain in our side. And he spoils all our fun. He makes all these rules and without God we can enjoy. But our project for enjoyment is a failure. We have so much money, so much technology, so much this, so much that. And it's not that people have become happier by declaring independence. It's not that, because now, when I was growing up, we had like 5 or 7 television channels. How many do you have now?
7,000
maybe. 7,000. So are your children 1,000 times happier than we were? Has that sort of exponential increase in happiness come about? Are their lives 1,000 times better because they have 7,000 channels, whereas we had 7? And what is the subject of those 7,000 channels? Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Same thing that we could watch on 7 channels, or that we can watch in nature without having television. The business of the animals, really, to eat, to sleep, to mate, and to fight. We can now watch on 7,000 channels. And this is called the advancement of human civilization. So that's, Srila Prabhupada called it advancement in foolishness, not advancement in civilization. To become bigger animals is not human advancement. To become more refined animals is not human advancement. Human advancement means spiritual consciousness. Tato Brahmajigyasa, when we inquire, who am I, what is the purpose of life, what is the source of everything, what is my relationship to that source, then we're talking about human advancement. Otherwise, we're talking about a cat and dog civilization, which is actually what we have. They're so advanced. Now we're so advanced that we can spend 50% of the budget on fighting. And we're so advanced that every day we go more in debt. What is that advancement? Even in business, do you consider your business more advanced the more you go into debt? But they're fighting like anything, spending money like anything, and going deeper into debt. And how is that advancement? So, however much we try to advance without God, without Krishna, it will be a failure. And when we become Krishna conscious, then our life becomes successful. Challenge the fools. Who's a scientist here? Who's in technology? Who's in the technological sector, Madhupati? Engineers? No engineers anymore. Come on, show your faces. Let's see it. Who admit it? Who's an engineer here? Now it comes out. So engineers, scientists, you can present these ideas. They're simple ideas from Bhagavad Gita, from Sri Prabhupada's teachings. Start up a conversation with any of your colleagues, with any scientific-minded person. Say, you know, what about this? See where it goes. Okay. Any questions? Yes.
Not question, but just
comment.
Something I was thinking to convince other people that the world did not start by itself.
The
universe didn't start by itself.
Didn't start by itself.
Yeah.
What is that argument?
Just taking their own theory of the Big Bang.
Mm.
They know that the Big Bang happened at certain point in time, about 8 to 10 billion years ago.
Mm.
But then they don't have any explanation why it started at that particular time and not before.
Yeah.
Why was it just dormant so many?
Yeah.
And they say that there was no time before that, but that's fine. But then why did this time start at that particular time?
Yeah, where do you get time from? There's a good question. And why does this bang go bang at a certain time? We see in practice, in usual affairs, if something goes bang, it's because someone lit a fuse or someone pressed a detonator. Things don't just automatically go bang. Or if something goes bang because you touched something to something.
The law of Newton. Newton says that the thing will stay in its...
Yeah, things will stay as they are.
They are, unless the external force acts on it.
Unless external force acts on it. So what... accepting that the universe went bang, what made it go bang? Why didn't it go bang before?
Stephen Hawking in his book has accepted this as a fact, a big challenge before the scientific community that they still need to...
He's accepted that they can't answer this question.
There was an article on Rediff.com.
On Rediff,
That one scientist, Indian scientist in England, has researched about in our Indian books, the Ramayana and Mahabharata and all those things are considered as a mythology. It's not true. They mean like it's a myth. So he actually researched a lot and through astronomy and all those things, and concluded that Krishna did exist 5,000 years ago.
We have a simple way of concluding.
And Mahabharata war and everything did happen.
We have evidence that Krishna existed. Bhagavad Gita is there.
Yeah.
That's simple enough
so,
for us.
So he was telling that those books need to be changed or whatever. Those books are wrong, you know.
Oh, yeah. They're all rubbish, that Krishna's mythology.
And this guy is a nuclear physicist or something.
Intelligent person. Why do we have to simply, accept it because they say something's mythology is mythology? How do they know? Have they actually researched it? They don't know. They were... Where were they 5,000 years ago?
He, calculated it from everything, month of Shravana, Shukla Paksha, Rohini Nakshatra, and Saturn.
There's so many things by which we can understand that the Vedic literature was giving. Sarasvati was giving very nice examples that the Vedic astronomy was accurate before the modern telescope was in existence. The distances, the orbits. And it was only in modern times, modern means within the last 100 years, that they started getting decent orbital numbers, because they didn't have the telescopes of proper caliber. So they couldn't do the trigonometry that you need to triangulation and so on to figure distances. Trigonometry, yeah? So you need to be able to do the measurements, otherwise you can't do the trigonometry. And they didn't have the instruments with which to do the measurements until fairly recently. And yet, even by the most conservative standards, say, let's be super conservative and say 1,000 years ago for the Vedic literature, although we say much later, let's say 1,000 years ago, even if you said 500 years ago, it would be revolutionary that such high-quality figures for the orbits of the planets were already there. So, Western science has some explaining to do. What else?
Yeah, just had some observation. You spoke about how it is not possible to change one species into another species.
By the way, the textbook examples have mostly been shown wrong. Who grew up with the moths in England example? That was the one that was in our textbooks when we grew up, and that's since been shown to be 100% fallacious. It's just not true. But do they go back and correct the textbooks? Yes, go ahead.
So, in Belgium, while I was visiting Belgium, I saw interesting kind of cows. They actually looked like pigs. And I was thinking that scientists, they are able to do certain kind of mutations, and cows look like pigs, but still they are cows. They cannot change them. Although they are coming close, so it's not.
Yeah, species means they can mate with one another and have offspring, but you can't mate a cow with a pig. You get, anyway, that's an interesting topic and an interesting book when it comes out. Watch for it. Rethinking Darwin for the BBC. With some contributions, actually, from some Christian scientists from the Christian Society. Three scientists from the so-called intelligent design camp have contributed chapters to this book, which is something of a first for a BBC book. Quite good chapters, actually. Good science. Yes?
What was it, really, a question or a comment? I just wanted to say that now they don't really teach, like, they teach natural selection along with Darwinism, but they also have, like, this little thing called creationism and intelligent design, where they're trying to say that there was an existence of God, but they're not really trying to say that there was a God. It's just, like, they don't really know.
Are they teaching that in your school?
Yeah.
Wow, cool.
Busties.
That's very good. The intelligent design people have been very active, and the scientists have been very unhappy with them. Of course, the creationists, Christian creationists, are rather crude in their ideas. You know, that everything's exactly according to the Bible, and everything was created according to their rather limited time frame, and everything has to be pretty biblical. The intelligent design approach has been much more successful, and it's much more reasonable and sophisticated. It just says, hey, when you look at what's there, there has to be some intelligent being behind that. Now you figure out who that is, but it's got to be intelligence, just has to be there. You don't get design. A simple example, that say in archaeology, what you do in archaeology is you pick up things like flints, you know, little stones of particular shape. And then now you have to discriminate and say, well, could this flint have taken this shape by some natural process? You know, by water wearing down on it, or by something falling on it, or some other known natural process. And if you rule out natural processes, then you say, well, it must be a human artifact. People must have created this thing that looks like an arrowhead or whatever it is. So you have that going on in archaeology every day, and archaeology is scientific. The business of discriminating, looking at an object and saying, is there intelligence behind it, or does it just come about by some natural process? So intelligent design takes that to a larger level and looks at the phenomena of nature at a grander scale and says, well, could this have happened on its own? Or do we see that there must be intelligence at work? Very reasonable thing to do. So it's good that they're letting them into the schools. Nice. What else? Now they only have to bring chanting of Hare Krishna to your school, and then we'll really have a good time. You have that too. I'm signing up.
One question. Even if we accept the Darwin's theory, don't we still have this question you raised to answer, that the initial living being, how that came into existence?
Yeah, even if you accept Darwin's theory, but we're not going to go that far. Why do we have to compromise with them and accept their theory? But even if we did, then they still have to answer, where did the first living beings come from? And even if they say that they came from chemicals, they still have to answer where the chemicals came from. But they have problems all along the way. Their life comes from chemicals, doesn't work. Where the chemicals came from, they have no explanation. How the living beings could have evolved, they have serious problems with their Darwinian picture. And they can present it in textbooks as being a very simple thing and as being accepted by every reasonable scientist and so on. But Prabhupada just said, you're bluffing. And he gave so many examples. Prabhupada, I'm a layman, but I can see that they're bluffing. Prabhupada was very good at that, by the way. He saw in so many different departments that they're simply bluffing. And economics was another one where Prabhupada said, they're simply bluffing. They're printing paper and they're calling it money.
Moon
landing. Huh?
Moon landing. The
moon landing. Moon landing was another one where there's serious problems. There's serious problems. I recently saw an interesting book about that, by the way, if anybody's interested. Drop me an email and I'll send you the URL for where you can get that book on Amazon. Pretty interesting, by a German journalist. It's about the best one I've seen so far about scientific problems with the story of space. He started out by pointing out that up until Apollo, the failure rate for these rockets was something like 60%. You know, they'd launch a Titan or whatever it was, and it would crash. And then all of a sudden they started the Apollo project, and every single one was picture perfect. Interesting thing to have happened. And all within like 10 years, you know, we went from not being able to reliably fire a rocket to being able to send men to the moon within 10 years, right? There was recently an interesting item that there's in the what is it, Rijk Museum in Holland. Some American diplomat many, many years ago gave the Dutch government one of the rocks from the moon. And it's been in that museum in Amsterdam for so many years, decades. And recently somehow or other somebody analyzed it and they found out that it was a piece of petrified wood.
So the rocks on the moon are made from wood, then, I guess.
At least that one was. The moon rock was made from wood. And now, obviously, there must have been some mistake, but no one seems quite sure where that mistake was. Except Prabhupada, he was pretty clear about where the mistake was. What else?
Is there any place where it says that Krishna created all the species, like in Bible it says God?
No, not all at once, but you'll find out how it was done in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, second and third canto, quite elaborately. It's not that everything's just created at once by Krishna. Krishna doesn't even do it himself, creating all the different species. That's gut work. You know, that's not Krishna's business. He outsources that.
Let Maya do that.
Yeah, but Brahma and others, they can do these things. Why should Krishna? He has appointments for rasa dancing and things like that. He doesn't have a waste his time. Anything else?
For the landing on the moon, wasn't there an article in Krishna.com or something like that that disproved the whole thing and showed that there was just like illusion shown on TV to everyone?
Well, there was an article on Krishna.com. I'm not sure. I haven't seen the article. And I don't know what we consider proof. You know, nothing is, you know, what does proof consist of? But certainly there's enough to cast doubt on the whole thing. One thing that, you know, when we were growing up, we saw the television you know, live broadcast of them landing on the moon. It was only until much later that we found out that actually what we saw were the television cameras taking pictures of the feeds that had been shown on the television monitors. You know what a live feed is, right? That you've got like your video camera and it's broadcasting directly. That's not what happened. They had, you know, NBC had their cameras trained on NASA's video monitor, which number one gave you lousy quality, and number two, you know, lots of ways things can get on a video monitor. So that does have a problem. A more interesting thing happened a couple of years ago when, you know, I mean, this was the greatest achievement, beyond a doubt, the greatest achievement in human history. Man has dreamed of going to the moon. And finally, our President Kennedy, you know, announced to Congress, we must do this. And we did. Man landed on the moon. And it was all taped and videoed and so on. And a couple of years ago it came out that the National Aeronautics and Space Administration has lost all the tapes. The greatest event in human history, and the record of it has been lost. I mean, if your husband lost the videotapes of your wedding, what would happen to him? And the entire collection. That would be the end of it, right? The whole program would be disbanded and, you know, heads would roll. But NASA has lost all the records of the greatest event in human history. NASA spaced out. That certainly does raise questions. Many other questions have been raised about the moon and its exploration. This very interesting book, actually, that was written by this German journalist. Somebody read to me and I'll give you. I was interested. You can read part of it on Google Books, but only part. Seemed like it raised some good questions. So yes, there are problems. Anyway, from the Vedic literature, the moon is something other than a place where they only have rocks. Or petrified trees. Anything else?
I was having a discussion, small discussion with my colleague at office about this Krishna really existing. I'm under the impression that it's only all this relative belief that you can do something, anything.